Orthodox Radio Crusade. Anarchism for the global city. Radical environmentalism for the concrete jungle. Esoteric explorations of the secret history of rebel culture. The Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
And good morning. This is Marjorie Moore, and welcome to Sunrise. It is Tuesday, June 5th, 2001, the final day of our marathon. And we have a lot of special treats coming up for you. We want you to stay tuned. I don't know, we call it a fire sale. I don't know, but whatever it is, you've got to get up for it, okay? It's 6.02 a.m. here at WBAI, 99.5 FM. We're in New York City. It's a fabulous day outside. So stay tuned, and we're going to wake you up gently.
Joy in simple things.
606. It's Marjorie Moore waking you up. Good morning. It's Tuesday. And Joanne is here with us today. She's not here with us every day, but we have an opportunity to have a decent weather report today. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning. It is currently 57 degrees here in Manhattan, mild today, partly cloudy with high in the mid-70s, with a 10% chance of showers today. Tonight, much of the same, partly cloudy, low in the low 60s, humidity at 72%, and sunset is at 8:23 p.m. tonight.
All right. Nice day. Nice weather.
Yeah, it'll be a beautiful day today.
Mm-hmm.
And today is Tuesday, June the 5th. It is the 156th day of the year 2001. And on this day in history, in 1968, Senator Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated after claiming victory in California's Democratic presidential primary. Gunman Sirhan Bassara Sirhan was immediately arrested.
It seems like yesterday.
Yeah.
That happened. We lost so many people at once, one after the other.
It's a tragedy.
Yeah. All right. Well, reminds me of the 60s and 70s. Someone was railing on my telephone message about, I used an expression like trucking or something, and he went on and on about how dated that was, and I don't know what the point was, but I thought, gee, how petty, you know, in light of the issues we have to deal with in our lives and society, that people kind of listen in and critique that way. I mean, there's so much other stuff going on that they don't hear.
Yeah.
And I'm always reminded, I sober up when I hear news like that, that it was that long ago that Robert Kennedy was assassinated. Anyway, I think we're going to have a long day and a good day with folks. They should get their credit cards ready. And anything that you heard during the pledge drive that you wanted and you went, oops, I forgot to get it, today's going to be the day. And we're all looking forward. We're going to have a lot of fun doing it. And we're going to have plenty of volunteers in the pledge room to help you out. We are located at 120 Wall Street on the 10th floor, and if you feel like coming in and having some breakfast and helping out, even if it's for an hour, just an hour or two, we'd appreciate it. And so it's 120 Wall Street. All right. We're still WBAI. We're corporate-free, free speech radio, and we're staying strong. And there is a view that I think is more helpful. And Bette Midler tells us what it is.
There are no guns, no.
Exactly, and it's 57 degrees out. I'm Marjorie Moore. The show is Sunrise, and the station is WBAI 99.5 FM. We're located at 120 Wall Street on the 10th floor, and we are listener-sponsored, corporate-free, free speech radio here for the community, community radio. And we work very hard to be here for you, and we've done a great job during the week and the past couple of weeks supporting the station, and we made it, we did it, and we're all thrilled that success is at hand, and we made some wonderful things available to you listeners, and you responded in kind, and we're very grateful for that, and thankful for those of you who are new to the station, so many of you from new places in the region, and you were very responsive, so we're very, very happy to have you on board as new members, and we want to welcome you to this radio station. We're here for you, and we're going to keep it that way. I guess, what's today, Tuesday, tomorrow, I guess we will return to normal programming, and Santiago Nieves will be here at 7 with the morning show, and whatever programming follows will follow, and we're back in the saddle. So Sunrise will still be coming in at 6. My schedule doesn't change. All right, and I wanted to say to my sister friend, girlfriends, I have especially a friend, Malika. I hope she's listening. She didn't leave for school yet. She's a beautiful teacher in the South Bronx, and we have a lot of laughs together, and I just adore her and love her. And we're always talking about women's bodies, and that's sort of going to be a show that I do about how women feel about their bodies, large women, small women even, but women are made to feel so bad about their bodies, and the advertising world would have us all, you know, surgically removed, period. And learning to accept ourselves and love ourselves has not been an easy task for lots of women, but I would say particularly women of color have had a difficult time in this society loving and accepting ourselves the way we look and the way we are. It's been a process. But I think, too, Bette Midler must have had some of that, because she thinks she's beautiful, and so do I now, and so do my sister friends out there. So this is dedicated to them.
It's really very simple. I simply believe with all my heart. I'm beautiful. I'm beautiful. I'm beautiful, damn it. I'm beautiful. I'm beautiful. I'm beautiful, damn it. I'm beautiful. So beautiful. I'm beautiful, damn it. I'm beautiful. I'm beautiful. I'm beautiful, damn it. Go away, little girl, they used to say. Hey, you're too fat, baby. You can't play. Hold on, this thing. What you trying to do? You know you're too whack to be an obstacle.
Too fat, too fat, too fine, too loud, too tough, too
Do you think we're blind? Take a look at yourself. You're not our kind.
Too fat, too white, too short, too tall, too big, too free, too red, too small. You don't belong.
Too fat,
you don't belong.
Too fat, too white, too short, too tall, too blue, too green, too red, too small.
I heard that song.
That was really, really cute. I hope you all enjoyed that. And you know who I mean. I had fun with it this morning. And fun is important. It's a necessary thing. When we get too serious, you better check yourself. When you don't have a sense of humor, better check yourself. All right, it's 6:20. I'm Marjorie Moore, and we're gearing up for a fire sale. And, no, we've actually got some more items to offer you and a variety of things that you heard about this week. Or some of you may not have heard because things that you're home able to hear about were on later in the day and you missed stuff. So we're going to mix it all up and make sure you get to hear everything. And maybe you'll hear some things that interested you that you weren't able to purchase. So you got to stay tuned for that. And you know that number is 212-209-2950. You should jot that down. And we prefer credit cards because we get the cash faster and you get the premium faster. And we do have some terrific things that you'll want to keep and you'll want to have in your self-education library if you're educating yourself, which we are all hopefully doing. You'll want to keep some things in your library. I just want to say something about, just take a minute to say something about friends, and I think kind of that was the theme today. I just feel like my girlfriends are so powerful and so beautiful and so important to me, and have gotten me through such hard times, and men friends have suffered because whatever I had to work out, I worked out with them, so they didn't have so much fun. But my girlfriends and I have really worked a lot of things out in a loving way, and it's just been great. And people think sometimes because you go through a lot that you're not a happy person. I'm not what you'd call happy. I'm joyful. And that means the joy is there no matter what's going on around me. That's what people hear in my voice, I think. I don't get too upset by what's going on around me. And there's distance on it. There's perspective about it. And life changes. Life goes on. And all the old platitudes apply. Time heals all wounds. And, you know, you just get some perspective on life. And, you stop contemplating your own navel so much. And you just start thinking about other people and having more fun and enjoying what's around you. Life is very short. All those things are true. You know, you sound so silly saying them, but they're so true. And when you have issues, you know, a problem shared is lightened, and we need our neighbors, and we need our colleagues, and we need our friends. I was thinking the other day, no matter how mad I get at my friends, I never want anything bad to happen to them. I never, you know, and I get, you can get mad at your friends and your family, but you never want anything bad to happen to them. We have to look out for one another. And we could do a better job of that around here, too, looking out for one another in a more healthy way, respecting boundaries, and just thinking about the other person a little bit more. I think it's real important. And when Bette Midler was saying in that song, you know, I'm beautiful, and then she's at the end, and she's saying, look out, because if I love myself, you know, it's like, look out when we love ourselves. And I know exactly what she means. So it's Joanne shaking her head. We know what that means, girls, right? Look out when I love myself. It means, if you think of it in terms of consumer interests, imagine if you loved yourself the way you are. The makeup industry would topple. And the diet industry would topple. We're talking billions of dollars that hold up this corporate empire. Just having women feel beautiful the way they were born, and not dyeing our hair, and, you know, not constantly at ourselves, fixing ourselves. And imagine all the industries that would just fall apart if we decided that we were absolutely beautiful and acceptable exactly the way we are, however that is, for this moment. Think about it. It's worth attaining that kind of self-acceptance, I think, because it makes a political statement, too. And so when we say, you know, when we're doing our what I call spiritual work or inner work that deals with all that stuff, self-acceptance being one of those things, and confidence and self-esteem, you can see the political power in that. If you relate that to, gee, you know, all I need is a bottle of Vaseline or something to keep my legs oiled, or, you know, I don't need that $15 botanical special or whatever there. It's a major statement when you love yourself. It's a major political statement. It's radical politics. And I wish we'd start seeing it that way and not viewing people who get that as weak or not political. I think it is the height of politics to be able to know who you are and to stand tall and to stand proud.
And I think it's one of the hardest struggles in your life, looking in a mirror and saying, I look good. I think that's one of the hardest struggles.
It is. It is. Because everything tells us, you know, we didn't get it right yet.
Yeah.
And I just refuse to live the next half of my life thinking that I'm not okay anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, as soon as we get... And also, I have daughters, you know, and they're so much better off than I was at their age, because I just won't have them not loving themselves and not accepting themselves. Especially the younger one, who's tall and kind of Amazonish, beautiful girl. And I see her now struggling. She's saying, oh, I'm getting big. And that's a sin. You know, it's like a terrible thing. It's an awful thing that we do to kids. And I'm telling her all the time, you know, you need to feel healthy. You know, it's not about your size. It's about being healthy. I know people who, right here, who were health people, who did all the right things, and they died anyway from different things. So, I mean, it's a lot to think about. But women feeling good about themselves is a major political, radical statement. And we're going to work on that and talk about that. All right, it's 6:27. I'm Marjorie Moore. Happy to be here with you listeners, my family, my radio family. And we're at 99.5 FM, right in the middle of the dial. And we're going to have a wonderful day today. We're going to party on. And we'll be right back.
And I am all alone. There is no one here beside me, and my problems have all gone. There is no one to deride me, but you got to have friends.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
Hi, my name is Lambert Marksman. I'm a volunteer here at WBAI, and I do a little bit of everything.
And this is Richard Antones, and I work in development.
We want to thank the volunteers so very much for helping to support this station during our recent pledge drive.
We know it wasn't always easy, and that's all the more reason we want to let you know how much we appreciate your help.
It gives me great pleasure to see people so devoted in making this drive possible. We really learn to appreciate you, and we know how important you are as volunteers to this station.
So feel free to reach over your left shoulders and give yourselves one pat on the back.
And please send in your pledge.
It's 6:33 in the morning. Those of you who have to get out and go to work, I hope you're up. I hope you're feeling better as a result of the last half hour. Those of you who had to get dressed, I hope you were looking in the mirror and going, I'm beautiful. You men, too, looking in the mirror going, I'm beautiful. And loving yourself is fierce and political. All right, Joanne's going to give us a little more weather.
It is currently 57 degrees here in Manhattan, mild today, partly cloudy with high in the mid-70s, 10% chance of showers today. Tonight, much of the same, partly cloudy, low in the low 60s, humidity at 72%.
Great. All right, we're going to just hear a little bit more of this tune in just a couple of minutes. Jabal Fi is coming in, and we're going to get started with our WBAI morning. We'll be right back.
Thank you. 10. Good morning. You are still tuned in to WBAI 99.5 FM. And welcome. I hope you had a good evening. And I had one. And now, maybe you should call your friends and loved ones and ask them to tune in and to be part of this experience. You heard Marjorie saying earlier that we're going to have a fire sale. Yes, we'd like to end the drive, our membership drive today. And we're going to go over some of the materials that some of you probably did not hear or you heard already and did not have the chance to pick one. And this is your last chance to do so. And throughout the day, we're going to be getting in and out of materials offered to you earlier in the drive. And you were just listening to the music of Los Hombres Caliente, Irving Mayfield and Bill Summers. And this is New Congo Square, volume number 3. And this morning, we're going to start this morning by exploring the origins of mathematics and physics. And we're going to start with Dr. Beatrice Lumpkin making a presentation. And this took place at Lincoln University years back and moderated by Dr. Jan Carroll. And basically, the theme was the African origins of mathematics and physics. So we're going to start with Dr. Beatrice Lumpkin. And in a little while, we're going to get into the origins of physics with Dr. John Papademore. And stay tuned. You are still listening to WBAI 99.5 FM. Again, my name is Jabal Fay, and Marjorie is here, and you're going to be hearing from her in a minute. Thank you.
symposium on the origins of mathematics and physics in Africa, and we have been fortunate in having here at Lincoln for the semester Professor Garth Baker, who is the moving spirit behind the symposium, and to have been able to invite some very distinguished scholars in this area. It's important that the Center for the Comparative Study of the Humanities sponsored this symposium, and one of the main thrusts and purposes of this center was to make a reality of cross-disciplinary studies at Lincoln, to take it away from the rhetoric and to make it a reality, because confronting us in the next century is an absolute necessity that we take a holistic look at education once again, as it was done in the ancient world. I'd like to, when asked the question, what do we mean by multicultural education, I like to say that my idea of multicultural education is going back to education in the ancient world, where students learned from their elders and teachers, and then they were sent on a journey to the ends of the known world in order to hear a vast array of opinions and ideas in an array of subjects. And what we mean by multicultural education is merely reviving that tradition. You then came back home and you synthesized this great collection of information that you brought with you. So it is in this spirit that the Center for the Comparative Study of the Humanities crosses the disciplines, takes a new look. New because it is simply that we have departmentalized knowledge, and now on the eve of a new century it is necessary to uncouple these divisions and to once again look, and to look through a spectrum of ideas, and those ideas that emanate. I don't know how many of you have been attending the lectures of Professor Baker. I saw more often than not more faculty than students at his lectures, but these lectures were especially aimed at you, and I would recommend that you think seriously of availing yourself of the opportunity while the semester is not too far gone. So, without much further ado, I would like to welcome the guests who have honored us with their presence here at this symposium. They are very famous scholars in this field, and we are indeed pleased to have them here. We were also expecting Professor Bernal, and I was looking forward to having him because his father had been one of my teachers, and his father's three volumes on the history of science are for me seminal works in broadening concepts of science and humanities and all the other disciplines that we have so often fragmented. what has happened in fragmenting the vision, we then have a fractured vision of learning. And it is bringing this vision together as a whole that one begins with mathematics and the ideas that mathematics excites in the human imagination. Professor Lumpkin, who will speak to us on that question of was Euclid African, is an eminently qualified person to pose this question and also to answer it. She has been a professor. I said has been because she's now an emeritus professor, Malcolm X College in Chicago, and this was the college at which my wife, Dr. Joy Carew, started out her teaching career. It was a very important experimental college, you know, immediately after that turmoil in the inner cities, you know, culminating with the Martin Luther King riots and so on, when there was imposed a consciousness that you needed to refocus the whole question of studies for peoples of color in this country. And Professor Lumpkin played a very important seminal role, and that seminal role expanded itself into a consistent evolution of scholarship in this area of looking at Egyptian mathematics from its earliest forms and then synthesizing this knowledge for students at different levels in this country, for students in the high school as well as those in the more advanced areas of learning. So we are very pleased indeed to have her here and to have her expound on this question of Euclid's connections with Africa, which have been passed over and obfuscated so very often. So, Professor Beatrice Lumpkin.
I would like to thank Lincoln University and Professor Carew for this opportunity to speak on a subject that I think is very important to us at this time. Although from the phrasing of it, you know, Euclid lived a long time ago, it may not sound that important, but to get the background that would help us understand the magnitude of the achievements of the early periods in Africa, let's have the lights out for or dimmed for a few minutes and we'll go back now 25,000 years ago, where mathematics began with people making the first records in the form of tally marks. And these are, can we have a little less light? Is that possible? Very good. This is not the very first. The earliest was 35,000 years ago, because here we see 3, 6, 4, 8, 10, 5, a pattern, perhaps multiplication by 2. Some great Africans had the brilliant thought, instead of all the individual tally marks, why not one symbol And that's like the upside down U, you see, for ten. The guide is pointing to one of them on an Egyptian tomb. This was taken inside a tomb. You may not see it too well. We'll show you figures of these going back to about 2600 B.C. More hieroglyphic numerals. Now we're at the first pyramid in the form of a step pyramid built for the pharaoh Djoser. And notice the curve on the temple roof. Right next to that temple, an engineer's plan was found, and which is very significant. We'll talk about that in a moment. The wall you see around there went for a mile, and it was about 20 meters high. Oh, maybe that's more like, we'll have to back down, say about 25 feet, 10 meters or so. Here standing are two obelisks, each weighing 300 tons, brought 600 miles, and as a single monolith. More of the wall around the structure. The individual stones that went into building the pyramids averaged around 2.5 tons. You see the remnants of gleaming white limestone. Originally, they were a spectacular sight on the Nile River. There's the greatest pyramid that we'll talk about. At the top, you see the remnants of the limestone covering. They're so huge, they were used like quartz.